Leap Forward. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting Radio. I'm Lynn, and I am here with the poet Christine Himitsu-White. Hey, Christine.
Good morning.
Good morning. We are here this morning, and that was, by the way, that was Mr. Billy Bragg. But we were all dancing in the studio here to Waiting for the Great Leap Forward. Waiting and a-waiting. So we are here this morning to talk about activism. What is it now? What do we have to do? We are at the pinnacle of the bottom, if you want to talk about it that way. But and one person who seems to write a lot about it, who's done a lot about it, is the activist Grace Lee Boggs. We're going to be referring to her work a lot, especially her latest book called The Next American Revolution, which she wrote with Professor Scott Kurasagi. Am I saying that right? I want to say it right.
Kurashige.
Kurashige. I have a Japanese speaker here. I'm really lucky. So what is activism now? We are, like I said, we are at the bottom. What are we going to do? What is activism in America? How are we going to proceed from this dull, numb state that people are in? And I'm going to start with a little quote from this book of Ms. Boggs, which, by the way, I should give you a little biography on Grace. She is probably one of the oldest living activists in the country right now. She's 97. She was born in 19, which makes her be born in 1915, I believe. Oh, no, 96. Went to school, got her PhD at Bryn Mawr, and in the 40s and 50s was very much involved in left politics in the United States. I could go on and on, but it would take up probably the whole hour. In the 60s, she moved to Detroit, and the activist Jimmy Boggs became her husband. And she has been in Detroit since then, working on citizen activism, working on how to rebuild that city. I heard her on Democracy Now! When Amy Goodman said to her, well, people are leaving the city. And she said, hey, who wants to be in a crowded city? She said, how can you pass her, one of her things about activism, how can you pass a vacant lot, a vacant building, and not feel creative? So we want to also know your ideas about what you think activism should be now. This is you are the community. We are here. You're my beloved listeners. You are the community here at KBOO, 503-231-8187. Or if you're not feeling like talking, just give us a little buzz, a little note at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. So I'm going to start with this one amazing quote from the amazing Grace Lee Boggs. The next American revolution at this stage in our history is not principally about jobs or health insurance, or making it possible for people to realize the American dream of upward mobility. It is about acknowledging that we Americans have enjoyed middle-class comforts at the expense of other peoples all over the world. It is about living the kind of lives that will not only slow down global warming, but also end the galloping inequity both inside this country and between the global North and the global South. It is about creating a new American dream, whose goal is a higher humanity instead of a higher standard of living dependent on empire. It is about practicing a new, more active global and participatory concept of citizenship. It is about becoming the change we wish to see in the world. And she didn't get as specific about that we as I would like, but what do you think about that, Christine?
I really liked how she lays it out that it's not so much that we need to give up our privilege, it's being taken away from us, and we need to deal with that. It's not so much like the old Marxist theory of raising the masses up as it is just getting everybody to participate in whatever group they are in now or whatever group they can find that suits their activist standards.
Well, and here's another quote. This means that it's not enough to organize mobilizations that call on Congress and the President to end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We must also challenge the American people to examine why 9/11 happened. which I'm pretty sure about that. It didn't have anything to do that much externally, but that's just me. And why so many people around the world understand, even though they do not support the terrorists, that they were driven to these acts by frustration and anger at the U.S. role in the world, such as supporting the Israeli occupation of Palestine and dictatorships in the Middle East and treating whole countries, the peoples of the world, and nature as only as resources, enabling us to maintain our middle-class way of life. So, folks, what do you think about this? What are we going to do now that we've been done in? We have pretty much we are in an oligarchy now ever since last Monday, though it's been creeping.
Yeah, since I always put it down to when St. Ronnie came to power.
Yeah, yes.
Things started falling apart. It became being totally okay to be totally greedy about everything.
And now, what are we going to do? 503-231-8187. Have you got any poems about this? Christine is a poet. And she's an activist poet, a revolutionary poet, and that's one reason that she's here today.
Yeah. Got one of several about working, in fact. I'm starting to write a big collection of work poems. I figure when I get done, it'll be time to retire, but I'm not done yet. So this one's called Devil's Deal. They say Robert Johnson made a deal at the crossroads, trading soul for success. One way to keep backbone and navel apart in a lynching state at a lynching time. And what about you? What clanks when it should clink when you earn your coins, when you spend them? We do as we must or think we must. The two early risings, the pasted on smiles, the words biting the inside of the mouth, trying to escape. The acid drip, drip down the back of the throat. It's the leash, the whip, the true drama of debts and dependence. Work is what we do as well for another shiny object to ease the broken parts of a flattened life. It buys a distraction from that question, the one that only you know but can't ask. Most of us are not torturing or slaughtering to stock the kitchen, to keep the house warm. The screams are faint but audible. This opera of good, evil is muffled, reduced to a squeal we can pretend we don't hear.
Thank you, Christine Himitsu White. Well, with that, we've got folks calling. So, Stuart, good morning. Welcome to Positively Revolting.
Hey. Hi. Hey, that was wow.
Early
was
morning poetry to go with your coffee.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's such a deep subject. Where do you start? I mean, what you guys do is just inspiring to me. I'm a musician, and I was listening to the prior program, and it inspired me quite a bit, you know. I think it's just people need to see what's really going on, and you guys expose that.
Information, you're saying. Information is key.
Yeah, it's in the cover-up, and it's all in that poem there. I mean, it's true. It's and Cabo is just so honest and non-corporate, and they're one of the only stations that, well, you know, even go there.
We are. It's true.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
And I talked to your station before, and I'm hoping to debut a little political piece on your show Sunday that you have on midnight, The Confessional.
Oh, on The Confessional.
Oh, good.
Well, La Contessa is an activist,
she's
too.
Great.
She is the Contessa. There is no doubt about it.
Good for you for doing what you can. Everybody has a part to play.
The working title is Alec in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we will all look forward to that this Sunday evening at midnight. And thank you very much for your call, Stuart.
You know, people need to step up and listen to Cable to see what's really going on.
Absolutely.
So
thank
thanks.
You. You're welcome.
Keep it up.
Thank you, Stuart.
You too.
Soon. Okay. All righty, then. Shall we move on to Mitch?
Morning.
Good morning, Mitch.
Yeah, I think, thank you for the show. And
you're welcome. What do you think about all this, Mitch?
Oh, my gosh, the vacant lot analogy was very powerful. You know, you think of all these community gardens popping up, and it corresponded with truly my observation. I'm in Clark County, in the Couve, north of the Couve, and I'm just one person, but all the only activism I see, other than just day-to-day community, you know, living, the only activism I see that really takes some effort and long-term planning and education and all that and outreach is the local food movement. And it has been growing. Somewhat out of necessity because of the economy, but people are getting back to the roots. But we're also hearing those little whispers from our elders. We did this and we did that back in the day. And that's how it goes, and that's where we're at, and that's where it's going to be. A Safeway is not sustainable. And then I also want to tie that in with what inspires us.
What inspires you, Granny, Mitch?
Granny D is, haven't heard from her in a while. She's another elder out there. Mm-hmm. Last time she called in on a show to KBOO, people were saying how inspiring she was. And someone, might have been me, asked, well, you should be retired. What inspires you, looking back on a bunch of vacant lots called people, you know, young people that are vacant with all that energy and raw energy? And she stopped in her tracks. She was almost taken aback. She was so thankful. It probably had been years since someone asked her what inspires her, you know, and take some of the pressure off her. I mean, she should be retired. We should be stepping up. And like I say, in Clark County,
I always think of retirement as only from a job. Then you can start from the job that you had to have to make a living. And when you retire from that, a lot of people that really blossom after when they can, they have age and wisdom, and if they have any kind of health, can do some amazing things. Isn't there a runner with your sister Christine that is in Hawaii?
Oh, my brother's wife, my sister-in-law, knows a woman whose name is Gladys. She goes by the Gladiator. And she's in her 90s, and she just finished the Honolulu Marathon. So it doesn't necessarily have to end. She only started running when she was in her 70s, too. So.
And it's great to have elders that are active and people that we can talk to.
There is quite a bit of...
That's what I'm talking about, yeah. Yeah. Like I picture retirement not as an end, but as a beginning of teaching. And
making a living.
Sitting on a porch in a big comfortable chair with a big glass of iced tea with people, youngsters, sitting around listening and being inspired by what inspired. I mean, asking this elder, what inspires you, Granny? You know, I mean, we need to do that more. Anyway, thanks so much.
Talking, good thing. Thank you very much, Mitch. I was I just went back to this article. This happened. They're talking about President-elect Obama, so this happened a while ago, but I was really inspired by 240 members of the Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America, as they call them, a small but feisty union that's always been in the progressive wing of the labor movement, illegally occupied their Chicago factory after their employer abruptly told them that it was shutting down the plant. To me, those kinds of things. In Argentina, I know, where our Annie Haynes is there. She'll be back next time we're on, folks. People took over abandoned factories. In Detroit, they're taking over abandoned buildings.
And Grace goes into some of the work she's been doing in Detroit. In fact, there's quite an urban farming movement where they've taken these lots, and they're not just having little gardens. They have farms on them with chickens and pigs and goats, and they're also looping it into the school system, which they've had to sort of rebuild themselves since it's everything's pretty much gone totally down in Detroit. Very interesting what can be done, and they're sustaining. They're changing Detroit into what it's supposed to be into the next century.
Well, and here's a quote from her again. Moreover, we urgently need to begin creating ways to live more frugally and more cooperatively now, because with times getting harder, we can easily slip into scapegoating the other and goose-stepping behind a nationalist leader as the good Germans did.
Yeah, some of that is already happening. Who is it that people are blaming now?
Could be gays. Could be someone with brown skin.
Could be immigrants, I'm sure.
Oh, immigrants.
Yeah.
Well, they have brown skin.
Yeah.
They have brown skin indeed. So I think we had another. Oops. Anyway, that I don't know what happened with. If anyone out there knows, this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Christine Hamitsu White. We are talking about activism, what to do now that we've been done in. And I think Brian is on the line. Brian.
Yeah. Hi,
good morning. What do you think?
Very good show. And I'm glad you guys are holding out on the positive. But I want to throw something really positive in here. You know, it's not our young people that have gotten us in trouble. It's our old people, you know, starting with our president-select, Mr. Reagan, you know, and Nixon and all those other guys. You know, if you remember, all those guys were way above 50 when they got in. You know, what I'm saying is this, is, you know, I'm 52. I talk to young people all the time. And, you know, some of them are distressed and some of them aren't. And some of them are just, like, in a haze. But, you know, the thing is they're not empty. You know, none of them are empty. And, you know, I look at it this way. They're all looking up toward older people for some leadership. And we have some great people in this country. But I have to point out one thing, and this is activism here. You know, number one, a lot of people who speak well and are saying things are also collecting money off of these organizations that are hurting people. You know, you take
examples of that?
Yeah, you take a guy, you know, I know a few people. I lived in Albuquerque for many years, and they're great people. You know, they recycle, they go shop at the co-op, they buy local, and they work for Intel. You know, and it's like, well, I got to make a living. That's cool.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that Grace says is that there's making a living and then there's making a life.
Exactly.
And part of the new American Revolution is to make yourself a life.
And my point is this, is like, and God love her, and I love everything she does, and without her, I don't know where we'd be. But I make, because of my principles, and I live a very clean vegetarian life, you know, spiritually as clean as possible. I'm an activist person. But, you know, I make under $1,000 a month because of principles. And when Amy Goodman, and I love Amy Goodman, please don't get me wrong, but when they want me to pay $40 to walk into an Amy Goodman thing, $25 for a book at Powell's by Amy Goodman, you know, and then I can sit in the winner's circle or whatever it is for $200. Now, look, I'm sorry. You know, that's not only Amy Goodman. That's David Crosby. That's, you know, anybody like this, you know, who's supposed to be passing this message. How do we get... I have the message. I'm cool with it.
Well, like, you know, you can go see Kitty Kelly. She doesn't do that.
No, I know.
Kathy Kelly,
what,
I do that.
What I'm saying
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, you know, Kathy. God love them, you know, Michael Palin, all these guys, $25 for a book, $17 for their paperback a year later. I can't afford to be enlightened. You know, and you know, the thing is,
do you have
Father
a computer?
Berrigan, Father Berrigan in New York, you know, way back, he never charged.
No.
Pete Seeger, how many free concerts does that man do? Abbie Hoffman, he enraged the entire book industry when he put out the book, Steal This Book. Mm-hmm. And he really meant it. Take it and learn from it and take it. And you know what? The whole point is we have to go back to where when Amy Goodman comes to town, she could fill up the Timber Stadium. If she just said, come on in free.
Right, and it's up to you to buy to whether to buy the book, and but you can't afford to be enlightened.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I just want to go back to that one statement that you had, that you can't afford to be enlightened, but you, things are on the internet. Now, of course, you have to have a computer, but you can go to libraries.
$45 a month I pay for my internet.
And you do it, don't you?
Unfortunately, I've come down to the point where I've had to. And, you know, that's the point, is like...
Hey, I do it too.
Yeah, I know.
It's worth, but, that is worth it to me.
But mm-hmm. but $45 a month is actually literally, okay, if I have to, if I get a chance, and I'm not arguing with you here, I'm sorry.
I know, no, I don't feel, it's called discourse, it's fine.
Yes. But you know what, if I'm paying $45 for my internet, and I'm doing this, and then Amy Goodman comes to town, or I won't pick on Amy anymore, but, you know, like Michael Palin comes to town, and I have to pay $40 to see him, I'm not going to eat for a few days. You know,
well, I'm just not going to go see him.
Yeah,
I don't need to. But the other, one of the things that people I knew long ago who were trying to live simply said that they, first of all, they lived in a sort of group situation, and they found that they, for myself, my friends are incredibly entertaining and informative people.
Sure.
And I like Michael Palin. I like his work, but I don't necessarily need to go see him.
No, not at our age. But you know what I'm saying is. Is these 20-year-old kids who are homeless, who are way underemployed or unemployed completely, need to go see him, and they cannot afford to go see him. And, you know, back in the 60s when, you know...
I don't know if I agree with that they need to go see Michael Palin.
Well, you know what?
They can look him up on the YouTube.
You know, see, where are they going to get it? They can't afford YouTube. They don't even have a place to live, a lot of them.
Right,
I talked to one girl yesterday.
No, homelessness is a whole, that is a whole different story. And that is definitely the shame and embarrassment of the United States of America.
Right. And you know, what I'm finally saying is this, is like, Ayn Rand made personal responsibility among, you know.
Well, she was a sociopath.
My group of people, she made it a perversion.
Right.
But, you know, the point is like, us liberals, us teachers, us leaders of these kids, where we want to go is we have to have personal responsibility / social responsibility. And until we start doing that...
And actual personal responsibility is not this selfish, inhumane, completely the opposite of compassion kind of thing, but... I agree.
Okay, and I'll leave you alone.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you very much for your call.
Oh, yeah, and thanks for listening.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, we've got Chuck on the line. Hey, Chuck.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's up?
I'd like to address what I see is the problem with imperialism and how we the people can get our
now we only
back.
Have an hour show.
Well, it's not that complex, actually.
Okay,
good.
Our nation's founders, what they did is they created a wall of separation between the federal government and the people. The federal government, under our Constitution, they did not have direct access to the people, so therefore they could not steal from the people to support war and imperialism.
So
that was changed with the 16th Amendment to the Constitution. That gave the federal government direct access through corporations to the people. In other words, when the people buy a product from the corporation, they are paying the tax. The corporations were created to be tax collectors. Are you following me?
I got a question for you. How does this what is your solution? What we're talking about is activism and what we can do now.
Yeah. Well, so
what are you
is to cut the funds off to the imperialists. You don't
So which imperialists are you talking about?
The
corporations?
We decide whether they get, you know, under federalism, it is we who are at the top. We are the rulers. The states serve the people.
The people?
And then the federal government serves the states. The 17th Amendment, when they took that away, they took away great powers.
Right. Here's what I want you, what are you saying is the solution to this?
The solution is to repeal the 16th and 17th Amendment to the Constitution, give the power back to the people, restore federalism.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, Chuck.
All right. Bye.
Well, everybody's got a solution. So, but poems. We got another poem from you? Well, in the meantime, I want to let you know that this is KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Our number is 503-231-8187. I am Lynn. I am here this morning with poet Christine Himitso-Wright, and we are talking about activism. We are talking about computers working.
Computers working. Why we should write things down on pieces of paper instead of having fallible computers.
Absolutely excellent. Well, in the meantime, we'll see if... So is your computer computing?
Yeah. It's
computing.
No, it's fine.
It's fine. Oh,
well,
okay.
Well, sort of fine.
So did you have another poem?
Yes, I have one from a series I did called Six Realms, No Waiting. I was at one time a Buddhist seminary student. And this has to do with the Buddhist cosmology, where there's different realms, heaven, hell, etc. And there's a realm of the fighting titans who are chopping down the tree of heaven because they think they deserve it all. So this one's called Ashura. These days, men in suits and ties are more frightening than hell's angels, gangsters, cops. They're all men. Even the women are men. Shirts white, denoting their religious purity. Wrapped in the either-or of dark wool. Pale skin meets white cloth at the collar. Snake slithers around the neck, points downward at assumed power. Mere anger doesn't make these monsters. Something thicker, coagulated, tar-like, breeds them, causes them to pick up their axes and chop, killing the roots to get to the fruit, all of the fruit. In this land of snakes, venom is a sacrament served in a stemmed glass with an olive.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to go to Bridget on the line. Hello, Bridget.
Hello. So I was really involved in the Portland anti-war, anti-corporate scene for many years. I worked as a community activist. I am a social worker, and I did a lot of work on the ground with the Sisters of the Road and Portland Indie Media, and just really was reacting to what I saw happen when Bush came to town. I had never seen such violence before, and I got very involved in a group of people, and I just got weary. I got very, very weary, and I had to stop because I felt like what was happening was we were in the streets trying to protest what was happening and wake people up, but really the masses were letting a few people go ahead and do that and take the brunt of the police brutality, not being able to find work, living, you know, lifestyles that put tremendous stress on us, and a lot of abuse toward activists, too, in Portland. And the good thing is that it really woke me up, because I am an older person, and I ended up being in community with young people who called themselves, identified as anarchists, mm-hmm. and also people of color, which I hadn't been doing for a long time. I'd been basically hanging out with other women that were older because it felt safer for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of work with the Raging Grannies and other groups, but that experience was just mind-boggling to me. And I ended up...
So diversity is important, you're saying?
Right. It stretched me. It made me look at my thinking and culturalization and just, you know, people would call me on things the way I spoke, you know, some of my ideas. And it wasn't a negative experience. I really thought it was essential for my own spiritual political growth. But I just got very weary, and I ended up just going and growing food. And so did a number of people. And we were, I mean, we get out in front of everybody, and everybody says, yeah, go ahead and do that. It's that same thing where, you know, people die because they're famous. And none of us wanted to be famous, so we started growing food in Portland. And
well, I think that everything has a time, too. And activism has many flavors and colors. It doesn't always have to be one particular thing. Growing food, is this for people? I mean, growing food doesn't sound like a bad thing.
No, it was a really good thing.
And you have to have things that nurture yourself.
Right. That's exactly what we all decided. It's kind of like the idea of the inward stroke and the outward stroke of meditation, is that you can't let yourself just go forward and let people put you in a position of taking the brunt or being famous. It can ruin your ego balance, and you need to do thoughtful things for a while. And I often thought of it as, well, we did this, now we're going to do this other thing and let other people do that work. So I think part of the activist community, and I think people are beginning to understand this, is that you can't just use people up and throw them out there. You have to take turns being in the front.
And that's an American way, too, to use people up and throw them out. So that's a whole new...
Right.
And what I saw, I wasn't anywhere near as involved as you at the time period you're talking about, but I'm sure you know too of how much repression came down on all the activist venues you're talking about, on indie media, on the whole Green Scare thing, and some of it got people nervous and all that, to the point where they couldn't do anything anymore. But I mean, for good reason. I mean, they've just recently started overturning the convictions of the Green Scare people, who were sentenced to felonies for years. So, of course, you got tired. You sounds like you were working awfully hard too. So I think that work did not go unnoticed. I think that we need people, and yes, we do need to not burn people out.
So I just want to finish saying one thing, that right now I'm living on a farm with a number of those activists from Portland, and we're helping a young person who inherited this farm. It was raising ryegrass. It's full of chemical pollution, but we decided that's where we were going to start, because it would be easy to go to a place that had no problems. Actually, it's not easy. That land is...
There ain't no such place, but okay.
Yeah. But we are trying to clean it up. I call it the biggest Food Not Lawns project in Oregon, and we're part of the Bean and Grain project in the Willamette Valley, which is to make the valley, the Willamette Valley in Oregon, self-sufficient for all of its food. We don't have beans and grains, and we're starting to do that. We've been able to be part of a group that now has about 3,000 acres in the last 2 years that have gone out of ryegrass and into food. And
great.
I think, for me, this is what I decided. We need to create an alternative world and not give away our energy to the corporate war and hate projects. And we need to create communities that are not prejudiced against people by the color of their skin, their gender, their age. And we need to start listening to each other, no matter what our age. I learn so much from young people, and young people will say, I'm learning so much from you. And the farming thing is that I was very involved with Oregon Tilth as a younger person. And my family, I grew up on a big farm. There was no chemicals at that time, and so I would call it organic.
So, Bridget, thank you. I'm going to have to just cut you off a little bit. We've got other callers, but we really appreciate your information and your input. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your work, too.
All right. Bye.
Thanks. I want to do a little teeny thing from Grace Boggs' book, and she talks about Martin Luther King, and she said he was very clear that suffering and oppression are not enough to create a movement. African Americans began the Montgomery bus boycott because they had replaced self-pity with self-respect and self-depreciation with dignity. In other words, a movement begins when the oppressed begin seeing themselves not as just victims, but as new men and women, pioneers in creating new, more human relations, and thus advancing the evolution of the human race. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I think. And I also want to let you know that you are listening to KBOO. I'm Lynn. This is Positively Revolting Radio. I'm here with the poet Christine Himitsu White. And coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, APA Compass presents their annual summer music feature show featuring Jimmy Wong, Rupa of Rupa, and the April Fishes and Lola Fair and Baby J. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today, so we'll hear Flashpoints, which features an interview with a leader of a protest at BP as thousands of people are sick as a result of the oil spill. That is almost old
right
news.
There.
It should be old news, yes. But it's not. We will also hear a talk by Brian S. Wilson, author of the memoir Blood on the Tracks. He's introduced by Daniel Ellsberg. At 11, It Takes a Village is off this month. We'll hear Being Black and Green, African Americans and the Environment, from the series Making Contact. At 11:30 on the Radio Zine, host Marvin Simmons speaks with members of military families participating in the national premiere of Homefront 9/11, Military Family Monologues, an original performance art based on actual accounts of how the war is coming home. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. And, you know, if you're not a member, you can be one. All you have to do is go to kboo.fm, click on the tip jar, and it will tell you everything that you need to know on how to do it. It's fast, it's simple, it's fun. You'll enjoy yourself. Did you have something you wanted to do, Christine? A little poem at this point? Or shall we go with more callers?
I wanted to just put in a plug for somebody who I find fascinating, which is... and easily available on the internet, who is and somewhat controversial. His name's Gene Sharp.
Oh, yes, Gene.
He's a 83-year-old poli-sci professor from University of Massachusetts, and he has written a number quite a few. He's been in the activism business since he was young. Nonviolent struggles.
He was a puppy.
Yes, he. Did time in prison for being a CO during the Korean War. He considers himself not a pacifist, but a transpartisan. His works are all have to do with nonviolence, and they're very accessible. If you look up the Albert Einstein Institute, he has a number of PDF documents you can download. They have purportedly been used in a number of the Arab Spring movements. He is not himself involved, but he considers himself more of a thinker. What I find him to be, he was the first person who made me understand why nonviolence is necessary. He says, by placing confidence in violent means, one has chosen the very type of struggle with which the oppressors nearly always have superiority.
So what are his techniques?
he's got... things such as 198, he's got a checklist, 198 things you can do, nonviolent things you can do. He's got self-liberation, the guide to strategic planning. And he pulls no punches as to people may die. He did help people in the Balkans and the Baltic states when they were breaking away from the Soviet Union. And he's done pretty extensive studies on how this works, what works and what doesn't. Do these meetings work? He finds hands-on stuff works better for training people. And he insists that things, just as Grace Lee Boggs does, that things have to be, these sorts of activism strategies have to be specific to where they're at. What works in Egypt probably won't work here or someplace else.
So we have to think of our own stuff. All right. Well, you know, we still have more callers. Thank you for that, Christine. I believe John is up next.
Hi.
Hi, John.
I wanted to talk a little bit about a strategy that I'm working on. I'm working on a book called Launching Dates for the Voyage to Earth Community. And the basic concept here is to put forward the positive goal that we need to be working for, which is Earth Community. David Corton and others have outlined and used that metaphor as the kind of goal that we need to be working toward as activists. And to get there, one strategy is to begin to reinforce our values by celebrating the global special observances created by the United Nations and by global civil society. So launching dates is actually a calendar of those 30 or 40 official UN observances that reinforce our values toward justice. And there are literally dozens of other observances that are created by global civil society, non-governmental organizations around the world. So this is like Human Rights Day, UN Day, International Women's Day, various days like this that we can all begin to celebrate locally, but at the same time, they're sending a global message to groups in our society and to our leaders that we need to be we need to govern ourselves at the global level as citizens, and to think of ourselves as governing ourselves in an Earth community way at every level, family level, state level, national level, and the global level.
That sounds really good.
How would a person find out more information? Do you have a website or?
I have an email. It's called Sustainable Futures, plural, sustainablefutures@msn.com.
Excellent.
And I'm in the process of building a website, but it's not there yet. So, but this book is about 95% complete, so hopefully I'll be doing some more publicity about it.
Well, thank you very much for your call and your work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So lots of folks are calling us with ideas about activism. What do we do? What do we go from here? We often have that topic on this show because KBOO is a forum for ideas. We like to think that we are a forum for ideas, and talk radio is one way to kind of get the community together because it's a community radio station, but I always say community is now the world. This is local. Our local community, and our number, if you want to call in, is 503-231-8187. If you just want to type something, we have an email address called positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And right now, I believe we have, is it Paul? Paul is on the line.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for your good work. I've been a member of KBOO for quite a while. And
good for you.
It's been a source of a lot of information that I've worked on. I've recently started getting involved with the Move to Amend.
Ah, yes. Yes, we've had, I'm blanking on the guy's name now.
David Delk.
Yes, we had him on the show one time.
Yes, and he's also has a television show on cable access.
Oh.
It just started this year. But John was talking about local and what we're doing as an organization and nationally is it's been done already in some areas, some cities, is to have a to work with the neighborhood associations, and then eventually we'll be asking the Portland City and Metro Councils to endorse a resolution in support of a constitutional amendment that it would assert the that corporations do not have the intrinsic rights of citizens. And nor is money to be protected as if it was speech. And that's a local thing that we would do, and then hopefully that would go national.
Yeah, those two things have been the death knell in democracy from what I can see.
Yeah, well,
from my anecdotal observations.
Right. I mean, Amy Goodman's show, they were talking about the ALEC issue, which has been going on now for almost a month, and that's a big.
What was that? I didn't
that was
hear.
Just on there. Yeah.
Oh,
I didn't hear the
ALEC,
show.
Yeah. About the corporations working with state representatives.
It's truly frightening.
Yes, and this has been going on since I guess it started up in the 70s, and there's even Portland. I mean Oregon. There's a state representative in Oregon. That was pushing through, I don't remember what it is, but if you go to their website, they have a list of all the representatives, and there's a couple from Oregon that are been involved with.
Well, now, what is it specifically?
I'm not sure what the bill is. You can check it out online. I don't remember right now. I checked it out like last week.
All right.
Because
the ALEC thing didn't mean anything to me, and I wasn't listening to everything Amy had to say this morning. We were trying to get ready for the show.
Yeah,
so.
it's an acronym, the ALEC, and it's ALEC Exposed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call this morning and for your work. And yeah, that would be it would be great to get that those two things amended, and I don't know, get back to people being people. It's a thought. Have you got a poem for us, Christine?
I've got one, not necessarily activist or revolutionary, other than I've been working non-traditional jobs my entire life, and I do get dirty a lot since I'm a gardener, called Ode to Dirt or What I Wore. I've carried clods and grains every day I could walk outside, brown smears on the new school frock my mother dressed me in, caked on winter boots so thick I could hardly lift my feet, falling out of pockets when fingers stiff from planting, I fumble for a bandana. Topsoil and subsoil and hard pan, sandy loam and smelly blue clay, from seed girl to root woman, I've worn these tribal markings on hems, knees, elbows, cuffs, December pale wrists marked where the work gloves ride up, dusty patterns on tanned bare skin on the forest trail, unstrung rosary between bare fingers and toes on the creek bank. I'm not afraid to plunge hands into the earth or lie upon it listening, even in good clothes, not fearful of what it holds, of being soiled, no longer embarrassed by the reminder, the talisman under each nail.
Thank you, working girl. I got the website up about ALEC. It's talking about the ALEC Exposed through corporate-funded American Legislative Exchange Council. Global corporations and state politicians vote behind closed doors to try to rewrite state laws that govern your rights. Now, I know that in Michigan, the governor wants to throw out city councils, throw out school boards, and appoint corporate if they feel that they're failing, which to them, I have a feeling failing means towing the Coke party line. I'm sorry, Tea Party line. Coke party line. Mm-hmm. They're the same. It's that whole slapping thing. So
it's brown liquid.
It's brown.
I know Amy was talking about how they're working, and I believe it's happened in Wisconsin already, where
Anyway, he wants to replace them with private sector heads, like you would have. Not just the the manager of the city, so that the cities and the school boards would basically become run by private sector people. No, yes. Not anyone that was remotely elected. So yes. I'm sorry, you go on.
No,
with
and I'm sorry because I interrupted you. What was happening on Democracy Now! This morning was talking about how some jobs are being replaced with prison labor. Well, this group has already worked to privatize prisons, and therefore they have the unwilling workforce ready to go.
That's pretty close to slavery.
Yeah. They're pretty scary people.
Yeah. Well, here's another Grace Bogg quote. Grace Lee Boggs. Movement builders are also very conscious of the need to go beyond slogans and to create programs of struggle that transform and empower participants. The Montgomery bus boycott, for example, created an alternative self-reliant transportation system. When she and her husband Jimmy helped launch Detroit Summer in 1992 to promote youth leadership and new visions for the city, we were inspired by King's last speeches addressing the alienation of urban youth to give young people in our dying cities opportunities to engage in self-transforming and structure-transforming direct action. Because I think people should look at ALEC Exposed and do what they can, like for the move to amend. But to me, at this point, it just seems really grassroots. I don't know if we have time for maybe one more call, or if a person wants to call 503-891. I almost gave my home phone number, 503-231-8187.
I think small actions really do count. One of my favorite websites, which is Shakesville, it's a feminist website, they tend to talk about teaspoons, where you're bailing out the ocean with a teaspoon. And I don't think we can judge how much our actions actually do count, because oftentimes the opposition, whoever they may be, is not going to necessarily say, oh, you're right, I give up.
Well,
but things can change. So
even if they do, things change all the time.
Yes.
And as Molly Ivins, I often quote, often said, freedom fighting is a long-term proposition. And there was a wonderful movie called What About Bob, where they talked about baby steps.
Yes.
And
yes,
it's still, it's slow. It's always going to be here for us to, even if one day the powers that be that are crushing the life out of the working people in this country are gone, we'll still have so much work to do. So part of that just seems to be that it should be your life.
Yes.
And but always try to get some joy from it.
Yes.
Because if you don't, you will burn out. And that is part of why we call this show Positively Revolting, so we can stay that way. And all right, I thought we had a call. Excuse me very much. All right, this morning I have been talking to, I'll kind of wrap things up now, I've been talking to poet Christine Himitsu White. My name's Lynn Mullick. We've been trying to talk about, Grace Lee Boggs is talking about the next American Revolution, what we can do with activism. What can we do now that we've been done in? Because we need to not stay done in. It's just not a pleasant place to be. And life needs to be about joy and peace and being positively revolting. See you in 2 weeks. Ani will be back.